This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Mukti Organics, results-driven, award-winning skincare made with certified organic ingredients and powerful actives. You can buy the revised and expanded second edition of Mukti's best-selling book, Truth in Beauty, for $89 via muktiorganics.com and retailers Amazon, Booktopia and QBD Books.
And at some point she collapsed, and then she'd do it all again the next day. Next on his breath was, "Do you want me to book you in for an abortion?" I said to Tom, I said, "Get my laptop." Woody for me was just Woody. I was so excited he was here. Work doesn't stop. And I suddenly went and threw up and I went, "Oh, hello, old friend." We just celebrate all the stuff he is.
Doctors and health professionals may have called Snuggle Honey Chief Julie Mathers geriatric on more than one occasion, but in my opinion, she's fit a hell of a lot into a short amount of time. With her husband, she founded and sold an incredibly successful business in flora and fauna. She's experienced miscarriage, and after trying for some time and some failed rounds of IVF, both of her sons ended up being conceived naturally. Her older boy Woody has Down syndrome and a heart condition that will need surgery one day soon. He was born at 34 weeks and spent some time in the special care. She returned to work just 4 hours after his birth, and to her surprise and her partner's, she was pregnant with her son Alfie just 6 months later. Now that all might sound overwhelming at best and incredibly stressful at worst, but that's not the story you're about to hear. Julie's story is magic. Her boys run their own races, that's for sure. But she's not too fazed. Woody is Woody and Alfie is Alfie. This is an incredible story, regardless of whether you're navigating disability or not, and we all need more Julie and more of these stories in our lives. From flora and fauna to Snuggle Honey, from Woody to Alfie, from her working class background collecting milk money with her mum to big business sales. This is one of the most colourful stories I'll ever bring you. I'm Lucinda. This is Ready or Not, and here is the hilarious, humble and happy Julie Mathers. Julie, you have been someone that I've wanted to interview since the day I started this podcast. I didn't expect this as my starting point, though. So I heard this on another podcast that your mum was a milk lady. She was the only woman in the business. She did it for 20 years. You sometimes went off with her. She would get up at 2 a.m. and deliver the milk for the day. Can you tell us a bit about your mum and her work ethic?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so good to be here. And I love that we've started with my mum. Yeah. So my mum, my granddad had a milk business, as it were. So he delivered the milk. And my mum went to go and lend a hand when I was four. And she lent a hand for 20 years. And so all my memories have been of mum doing the milk. And yeah, she just got up at the crack of dawn. And she was really good at delivering the milk as well. Because she didn't just deliver the milk. She did that I think that was it went to 7 days a week. But then on a Thursday and Friday night, she'd go and collect the money. So, and we'd often go on collecting with her, called it collecting. And so, because those were the days where, this is a very long time ago now, those are the days where you had to go and knock for your money. So we'd go with her and we'd knock on people's houses and go, "Oh, it's £3.40 for the week," or whatever it was, and people give us the money. So that I've grown up with her working being a really big part of my life. And so she was never around when I went to school in the morning. So, and this is where my dad comes in as well, who's amazing. So my dad always got me ready for school and took me for school and did my hair, which was always a bit lopsided and all that lovely stuff. And then I think my mum used to get home from the milk about midday. So she's been going for 10 hours already. And when she gets home, then she's doing housework. And we grew up in a working class home and really hard working home. My dad's a painter and decorator, still is. And then she'd do the housework and then she'd come and pick us up from school. And then you keep going and make us dinner and da-da. And at some point she'd collapse and then she'd do it all again the next day. So I saw my mum working really hard to help us as a family and help her family too. And I also saw that women could do anything at all. I grew up never thinking that I'm a woman, I can't do anything. I grew up thinking I can do whatever I like because mum did.
What a story. So from your mum to you, that's the perfect segue. You leave school, you enter the world as an adult thinking I can do anything I like. What is it that you do? Take us through your career up until Flora and Fauna.
Yeah, so well, after school, I actually went to go to uni to study engineering. So I was the first one in our family to go to uni. So it was, so no one knew what that was about. Neither did I. It was just like, oh, we'll just go and see what we do. And it was interesting. And that was where only 5% of the course were female. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, but again, that didn't really bother me either. I was just kind of cracked on with it and got on with it and have some amazing female and male friends from then. And then after, I didn't want to be an engineer at all. I just didn't know what else to do. Because I really love maths and science. I actually started off doing maths for 6 weeks and then I went, oh, this is really theoretical and boring. So I went to engineering. But I'm definitely a science sort of, I suppose, educational background type person. But I didn't want to do that. And then after uni, again, really didn't know what I wanted to do at the age of 22. So I went into accounting, which I did not love at all. So I did that for 8 months. And I did some of the exams and what have you. And then I just looked at myself and I just looked at some of the accountants who I was with who were older than me. And I just went, do I aspire to be you? And I went, I don't. And it's nothing. And accountants are super important, right? Right, really important and amazing humans. I just didn't want to do it. And so, and I didn't have love for it. So I quit with nothing to go to. I took myself off to India. I lived in Wimbledon in London in a flat and I sublet my room to a mate. I cleared off to India with not much and disappeared off there for a bit. And my grandma was born in India, so I kind of wanted to have a look around there.
Oh, wow. Whereabouts did you go? Were you on some sort of yoga journey? Quickly tell us about that.
No, I'm rubbish at yoga. Can't think. No, I actually flew into Nepal, went trekking around there. I was just on my own doing it, trekking around there, and then took some buses down to Varanasi, which is probably one of the most amazing places I've ever, ever, ever been. That's where a lot of all the Ghats are and the Ganges, etc. And then came across India to Delhi and then worked my way down. So it was awesome, just like buses and trains. And that had an amazing experience doing it. Totally encourage my kids to try and do something like that. I just learned a lot to hairy moments. But still here, which is always good. And then I came back and I just went, I just really want to work in retail. So whilst I was at school, I had a job in a bakery and then I worked in supermarkets. And I just kind of really enjoyed the tangible aspect of retail. I just thought, you have a product and you sell it. And I kind of like that. So, and I really enjoyed my bakery. That's my second favorite job after one I do. So then I joined a graduate scheme at John Lewis in the UK. And then for the next few years, I worked various jobs in retail. So I did buy merchandising for Virgin record stores. That's when we had record shops. That's when records were a thing. And then I worked in management consultancy for 6 years in retail, which was super fun because got to travel all over the world. Spent 6 months in Japan, did all sorts of cool, fun stuff. And then had 2 years in private equity in retail from 2007, 2009, and then the GFC hit in 2009. And our business was an Icelandic business, and Iceland as a country pretty much went under. And so our business went under. I think it was February the 10th, 2009. And it was the first time in my life, other than when I went to India, where I went, geez, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And my sister had just moved to Australia to marry a man she met on the internet.
Wow.
She met him via Facebook. Anyway, and I just thought, I'm going to go and see Louise. And whilst I was over here, I'd been offered a couple of jobs back in the UK, but they were really boring. They were really, really dull. And I'm a big fan of going with your gut. And a recruiter was calling me and I said to him, I said, see if you can get my CV onto someone at Coles' desk. So he did. And he called me up and he said, can you go for an interview tomorrow? And I went, yes. And I'm like, I have nothing other than shorts and t-shirts. Sure. So I went off to Southland Shopping Centre, bought a dress and off we went. Anyway, ended up moving out here to work for Coles and in there on 19. And that's, I think, when my real love for online started. So that was 15 years ago and worked with Coles for 3 years, then actually moved to Sydney. They were in Melbourne, then moved to Sydney and worked for apparel groups, that's Saba and Sportscraft, running their online. and then moved to Masters Home Improvement, if everyone remembers that. That was like a Bunnings competitor. So Woolies decided they would start a competitor to Bunnings because Bunnings is probably one of the most successful, if not the most successful retailers in Australia. And so Woolies went, well, we'd quite like a bit of that. So they started Masters Alternative in a joint venture with Lowe's from the US. Anyway, way too much detail. But I went in to run online for them. And that's a business. It's like an amazing success story and also an amazing close down story because I started there, I think in 2014, maybe 2013, something like that. And worked with them for 3 years. But in the space of basically 4 years, they'd grown a $1 billion business. So it was phenomenal. It's phenomenally successful in some ways, apart from not being profitable. And basically, the joint venture between Lowe's and Woolies kind of blew up. And so the business was shut down in 2016. I'd already started Flora and Fauna at that point, which was my little business on the side, because I was just super keen on doing something for myself. I wanted to do something for myself. So I started Flora and Fauna. It was born out of a passion for finding cruelty-free beauty products, because in fact, I've got a whole bunch sitting in front of me because I'm judging some awards at the moment, so I can do show and tell. But like things like lip balms where you go, I just don't want rubbish chemicals in them and I just want to know that they're not tested on animals. So I just started that and went, well, what if there's a place where you could just buy all your stuff and you know it's cruelty-free? So I started with that and then it just grew from there. And by the time Masters had shut down, I kind of had to make a decision of, am I going to go and get another job or... Because Woolies actually said, do you want to come and stay at Woolies? And I was like, not really. Not filling me with excitement.
So just quickly on that. So you'd been working on Flora and Fauna. This gives me some inspiration and I guess a bit of affirmation of what I'm doing. Affirmation's not the right word, but we'll press on anyway.
I know.
So had you been doing this side project that would grow? Oh, poor Posey's coughing. I don't know if you can hear
Posey.
Her. So you've been working on this side project, we'll put in inverted commas, that ended up being an incredible business sale for 2 years while working full time?
Yeah. So I did it. Yes, basically. Yeah. So what I used to do is at the time I didn't have children.
That frees up some time.
That frees up an enormous amount of time, right? So I would go to work and do my day job. And actually in that time, I managed to take on IT at work as well. Because I was there going, come on, you've got to give me something else. I really wanted marketing, but they wouldn't give it to me. But anyway, and then I started F&F in my evenings and weekends. And I work really hard. Like I work crazy hard. So I'd be up to like 2 or 3 every night just working on this thing. And then when we launched it in November, so I came up with the idea in like June 2014, launched in November 2014. And yeah, and you start by getting maybe one order a day if you're lucky. And then it started getting some traction. So I think that first part year, we did 70K.
Wow.
But then the second full year, so the year ending 2016, when I was still at Masters, we did 400. And then when I left Masters, we were on that year, we did 1.5 mil. So and this was all born out of just me putting in some of my savings, which wasn't really much. But what that helped me do was we didn't take any money, like we didn't pay ourselves salaries. So Tom helped me with the finances, which is good because I didn't want to do that given my aversion to accountancy.
Boring, you deal with that.
And I'm like, no, not for me. And then, so basically for about the first 4 years, we didn't pay ourselves salaries. And for the first two, that was fine because we were both working. So that was totally fine. But it got to the point when Masters shut in me going, am I going to actually do this full time or am I going to go and get a job and keep this being? And I just went, you know what? Sometimes you've just got to back yourself. And I went into it full time. And from then, that's when it really took off because also Tom did that too. So we both at the same time left our jobs and he was an engineer with Lendlease or something. So we both just went, okay, throw caution to the wind and escape these big old jobs and do this. Honestly, the best decision we've ever made. And it was, you know, for the first 2 years, we didn't pay ourselves. And when we did pay ourselves a salary, it was a really low salary, like it wasn't much. And even when we left the business, So I was on much, much less than when I first came to Australia, put it like that. So we're paying ourselves enough to pay the mortgage, pretty much.
In those years where you hadn't taken a salary yet, are you just living off profit as well as savings? Or how does that work for someone that's really not business savvy?
So we lived off savings, which I had. And also when I left Masters, because I was effectively made redundant, then I got a see you later prize. So
I love that. Yeah. I wish that for more people, the redundancy package.
But we just said, but we also just lived really economically. So we lived in flora and fauna t-shirts, which of course we expensed through the business. So our clothing was flora and fauna. And we were in those early stages where we wore our flora and fauna t-shirts everywhere because we are walking billboards. And so that's what we did. And we ate suddenly when you're not going to the coffee shop and buying yourself cups of teas and coffees and stuff like that, you actually save quite a bit. So we were just super, super frugal. In fact, throughout the whole time of Flora and Fauna, we were frugal because we just, we didn't take any money out of the business. Every dollar that we made from the business, we sunk back in for growth. And that was very, very important for us.
Wow. So you have this business that is flourishing, but not in the sense that you're all of a sudden overnight millionaires or taking heaps of money out of it. When does the talks of pregnancy, babies, all of that enter the picture for you?
Yeah. So I got married pretty late. So Tom's younger than me. He's 6 years younger than me. And we got married when I was 37. And then I wasn't actually at that point that sure I wanted kids. Now I couldn't think anything different. But I was just there going, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So we kind of went into this going, we're not sure. And then I think when I got to about 40, so I'd already started FNF, we kind of said, look, we should actually try this. And we went through two rounds of IVF because nothing was happening. Well, actually, rewind, in 2016, I had a miscarriage, which was more horrific than I thought it would have been had I not. So Tom was away in New Zealand and I was with my mum and dad in the Blue Mountains and it happened there and I ended up going to hospital here. It was just far more emotionally draining than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Just quickly on that, how did that, so then there was a bit of a, I guess, a gap between that and then having a baby. How did you feel in those years? Because it's a really, as you say, it was quite an emotional space to be in. How are you feeling about babies in between that period and actually falling pregnant again?
I think I felt I needed a bit of time to get over that.
Yeah.
It was quite emotional for me. Because we'd spent quite a bit of time wanting to tell people at Christmas and all that kind of stuff. And even now, it's sort of getting a little emotional. And so I definitely put it just on the back burner, I think, for a bit. I think I just needed to adjust or grieve or whatever it was for a little bit. And then we went, we'd like to do this again, but nothing was happening. So then we went through two rounds of IVF. Gosh, they would be, when I was probably about 40-ish, 41, maybe something like that. They didn't work. So lots of eggs, but none that came through to being viable. All that technical, beautiful terms that they use. And then we did transplant one, but that, I don't know where it went. It's nothing stuck. I'll be quite frank. The woman transferring it didn't give me massive confidence that she was just doing.
Oh, no.
I was like going, all this absolute accuracy to this point.
And now you're fucking it up for me.
Exactly, pretty much. I'm like, what? I feel like it was just left on the floor or something. So that didn't happen. And then we just went, oh, you know what? What's meant to be will be. And so we just forgot about it. And then I went on a detox retreat. I love my detox retreats. I went on a detox retreat to Thailand in 2018. And when I got there, because Tom's way across my cycle than me. He's way more across it than me. I'm a bit oblivious. And when I got there, he went, are you on your period yet? And I went, no, but I'm on a detox retreat. Messes everything up. And he goes, you've just arrived. And I went, I said, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And then anyway, about a week later, I went, God, it's still not here. Maybe. And I felt a bit funky too. So I went to a supermarket in Thailand and bought a few pregnancy kits. And figured out, now learned what the tie for pregnancy is. Pregnant. Yeah.
Do you remember what it is?
Lots of little words, little letters. But yeah, but it's pregnant. So,
wow.
But because we'd had trouble before and had miscarriage, I was like, well, boy, let's see. Anyway, that's when we came back and the And I was 42 at the time. And that's when, yeah, came back and then we went on that little journey.
Wow. How did you feel in the first trimester after going through a pregnancy loss and I guess having these years of coming to terms with that?
Yeah. Well, I felt really sick. So I had the HG throughout the whole thing. It was quite vile, actually. And so I was bedridden for a fair bit. I was bedridden for 2 weeks solid until I realized that there was drugs to help. And that was really tricky with work too, because at the time, the team, because we were growing out of the warehouse, the team were working, like the office team were working in our home, and they were in the living room, and it was a really small house too. They were in the living room.
Oh no, and you're sick in the bed.
I know, and they're just thinking, gee, she's a lazy old. And so I ended up going, look, I don't want to tell you this, but this is a really tricky thing for me to navigate right now. So, yeah, so I think for those first 12 weeks, I just felt, apart from being sick, just concerned or let's just wait. I just wanted to wait for the first 12 weeks to the 12-week. Yeah, there were so many things where I'm like, oh, this might not happen or, you know. So, yeah, so it's all a bit overwhelming, I think.
And then I guess the overwhelm didn't end there, because then you get to your 12-week appointment. And I think that's where you discover your son's Down syndrome. Diagnosis, is that the right term? I'm not sure. You can tell me.
It is. Yeah.
Which is a lot to have gone through alongside hyperemesis and previously having a miscarriage. Tell us about that time.
Yeah. It's kind of, so we had the Harmony test, which, I mean, our obstetrician did keep reminding me that I was a geriatric, so throughout the entire thing, right? So, oh, it's all right. I feel pretty good, but not now.
I look great. I feel great. Shut the fuck up.
Pretty much, right? I'm like, sorry, I'm not geriatric. And then you had the Harmony test. And it was weird because for some reason, and I don't, so through the whole IVF process, we kept being told throughout the whole thing that the embryos were, I can't remember what words they were using, but I'm fairly sure it was things like abnormal or blah, 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 borderline, this kind of stuff. So there weren't many that came through that. Yeah, they kind of said, oh, I think quite a few of them had genetic challenges, whatever the right word is, right? So it's weird because when I took the Harmony test, I almost quite, part of me sort of slightly expected that Woody was going to have Down syndrome. I don't know why.
How interesting.
Yeah, because with Alfie, I thought the complete opposite. So I don't know, maybe it's intuition or something. I don't know, sixth sense stuff. But basically did the Harmony test. And then when he told us the results in his office, still part of me was a bit like, okay, right, what does this mean? And then I remember saying to him, so what's the gender? I don't know why, I just wanted to know. And he just went, oh, I don't know. I'm like, oh God, well, like, yeah, kind of wanna, it was all tick the box and find out. And then, but it was, again, it was very overwhelming because next on his breath was, do you want me to book you in for an abortion?
Oh, as in just a total assumption, not even really assumption. Thinking that you would, wow.
Complete assumption, because apparently not. That's what 98% of people do, which is absolutely, and it is absolutely a choice, right? It's absolutely a choice. But I think my challenge with it is that he assumed that would be my choice. And I'm a big believer of, I think we need a lot more education at that point, because it is very overwhelming for you as a parent. And you are given a tiny time frame to make a call. And I just don't think it's okay. Because also you and your partner have then got to be on the same page and all of that kind of stuff.
It's a lot to take in. A pregnancy is a lot to take in, let alone extra things on top of that.
Exactly. And you just, so I remember I came home because I just went, whoa, let me just come home. And I knew of Down syndrome, but I didn't know much about it. So I came home and got onto Google. Yes, that's where we find out what's going on in the world, right? And I struggled to find that much information. I had a look on the Down Syndrome Society, and I actually think Down Syndrome New South Wales is now doing an amazing job. But at the time, they weren't. They were pretty rubbish. But now that the CEO in charge is phenomenal, so around awareness and what have you. But yeah, I just came home and did some Googling. Tom and I spoke to our mums and dads, and Tom's dad's a doctor. So he had a, you know, doctor's approach to life. And I think the best, and we were just going, what do we do? What do we do? And we were doing an expo. So a lot of the things we did at Flora and Fauna, we were doing expos and shows and all that kind of stuff. We quite like it, actually. And we were driving up to Brizzy. So Tom and I had a really long drive to just talk things through. And it was on that drive that we went, what are we even thinking of? Like, he's ours. We're here to protect him. And we just went, we are absolutely the right people for the job. We don't know what we're doing, but we're going to do as best as we can.
Yeah.
And as soon as Tom and I had both collectively made that decision, it was like a massive weight was lifted off our shoulders. And we just went, and we both felt so good about the direction we were going in. But it takes time.
What did your parents say? I'm interested to know.
So I think my mum was a bit like, but she didn't know either. So she had no context around it. My dad, who I just love dearly, he had the best response. He's like the most measured horizontal. He's super horizontal, my dad, but he has, when he says something, it has meaning. And he just said to me, he goes, Julie, he goes, you know who you are. You know your values. You know you as a person. He goes, you're something like, you're going to want this baby. So, you know, make the right decision for you. And just didn't offer, like my dad does, didn't offer his opinion, just gave me wise words.
Yeah. Gave you space.
Gave me space because we had lots of people giving me their opinions. Like one of my friends actually said to me, well, I know what I'd do if I was in your position, meaning. So we had lots of opinions, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and I think, yeah, my dad's response sits best with me in terms of, yep.
So you have an HG pregnancy. You know to expect that your son is going to have Down syndrome.
Yes.
You have a busy job and you are co-pilot of this operation. And it probably matters more now because there's a child coming into the world. And that's not to say that people without children's business don't matter, but I guess the stakes are higher in terms of responsibility and financial responsibility. Isn't just the two of you anymore. Tell us about how you navigate the rest of your pregnancy as a worker.
Yeah. Excellent question. So once I discovered the magic of Zofran, life became a little bit easier. And I stopped just vomiting up in random car parks and various other. I literally had a sick bag with me, like permanently. Oh my God, I could talk through this, but it's way too graphic. So anyway, so we'll move on.
I sort of want to hear it, but maybe that would be too much for some pregnant listeners.
Exactly.
You might have to tell me offline.
I'll tell you offline. But it was, anyway, it's pretty. So once I discovered that there were drugs, I did get to be a bit more mobile. And then eventually we told the team, it was quite funny because that was the year, I think it was, we went and won a Telstra award. And at that point, I hadn't told the team. And I went up on stage to go and collect the award. And then I came back and we had all the photos and da-da-da-da. And at the time I was going, yeah, no one knows, no one knows. And then I was looking at the photos afterwards and it was just like me with this like bump. Like, I'm going, I look quite pregnant, actually.
Way too pregnant to be keeping this a secret.
Yeah, exactly. So once we told the team, it became a lot easier because then they realized why I wasn't helping in the warehouse move. Because up to that point, I was like, oh, God, you've got a bad back. And honestly, from that point on, I just cracked on as I normally did. So I just kept going as I normally did, just had the appointments, but just kept moving forward. So, and it was kind of business as usual for me. And until, because one of the things we did find out along the way was Woody has congenital heart defect. So,
which is quite common, isn't it, in Down syndrome? Yeah.
It's 50% of babies born with Down syndrome have this in various degrees. And so he has a hole right in the middle, plus also some of his plumbing that goes in is a bit funky, but still workable. Anyway, so he has to have heart surgery. Now, a lot of babies born have to have it straight away. He wasn't in that position, but he does need it. So we're going back in a few weeks, actually, to see the heart surgeon. They wanted him to be a bit bigger and stronger. So it's probably fairly imminent, actually, but we had that to contend with as well. So, and then it was at, I think it was about 34 weeks. But so my pregnancy from then was pretty like standard, I think, or it felt standard for me at least. And I think about 34 weeks went in to see the obstetrician. And he just went, yeah, your baby's not rowing. So I'm going to send you in for a scan. And this was like a Monday morning because I left my laptop on my desk. I'd just gone off to the obstetrician with Tom. And then I went off to Norwest to have the scan and never came out. They basically went, actually, no. So I had the scan and they went, and there was all lots of hush chatter. And then they went, okay, you need to go back and see your obstetrician. So I was like, what is going on? So he phoned me and he said, can you come back to my office now? I'm like, sure. So went back and he said, look, your placenta's given up. I think he reminded me I was geriatric again at that point. You're an old bird. You've done your time. So, and he just said, he goes, at this point, he's better out than in. So I'm going to, and this was Monday. So he goes, I'm going to induce you on Wednesday. I went, okay.
And I have a lot to do between now and Wednesday.
No, I'm there going, I've got all these meetings. What have I got to do? I'm going to cancel the meetings. So he goes, just pop into Norwest on the, way back to the office and have this injection steroid to open up his lungs, basically, because he's not ready, but we're ready. So I popped into Norwest, had the injection, and then they were monitoring his heart. And basically, every time he kicked or I must have been having like minor sort of something was going on, but his heart kept dropping. And so they made the cut. So they kept me in overnight and they basically said, he's not going to survive a normal vaginal birth. So we're going to have an emergency C-section and we're going to do it now. And I was like, right, right. And at this point, my laptop was still on my desk. I said to Tom, I said, get my laptop. I was still in my, so I go to work most of the time in shorts and t-shirt, right? So I was still in my flora and fauna t-shirt and my shorts. I had not packed a hospital bag because I wouldn't have done that at 34 weeks. And so I said to Tom, I said, I think I need like some PJs. And I said, just go to Target and just get stuff.
Whatever comes to mind, just pack it.
Yeah, exactly. Just buy me something. I said, get me chocolate. I think I need chocolate.
Maybe a few baby onesies.
Yeah, exactly. It's a baby onesies, right? We're going to And then, yeah, and on February 19th in the evening, I think it's 7:30, he was born by emergency C-section. But he was really tiny, so he's only 2 kilos. So he was in special care for a few weeks. And that was the start of our little crazy journey with Woody.
As the founder and formulator of Mukti Organics, Mukti has been an active leader within the wellness industry for over 3 decades. I recently heard all about it when I interviewed her for Ready or Not, and that is a conversation I cannot wait to share. She's written an expanded second edition of her book Truth in Beauty, and I've been lucky enough to read an early copy. In this book, Mukti lifts the lid on the dark secrets of the beauty industry. And she also divulges insider knowledge on the importance of putting your health first by detoxing the products you use for yourself and your family. If you've ever wondered what's in your skincare, or perhaps picked up a label and read it without understanding any of the ingredients, this book is for you. You can purchase Mukti's book, Truth in Beauty, the second edition today for $89 via the Mukti Organics website, Amazon, Booktopia and QBD Books.
Wow. And so at this point, he's in special care, which I have been through, but my son didn't have the extra complications or not complications, but challenges that you've had to face.
Yeah.
What at that stage was, I guess, the stressor? Had you come to terms with his disability? Was it interesting navigating it when he was actually here versus in your tummy? Was the stress more his heart condition, the fact that he was trying to grow in special care? What was the most, I guess, stressful thing at that point for you?
I was actually not that stressed. I was just so excited he was here.
Yeah.
And by that point, Woody for me was just Woody. So Woody, regardless of Down syndrome or anything else, because we didn't know what, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So I was so, so excited he was here and just, like we all are when we have a baby, right? Just amazed by this small, this little human. Who's just, yeah, it's just overwhelming, but in such an amazingly great, beautiful way. But I wasn't particularly stressed about much. And they'd also said at that point, hey, look, yeah, he's got a problem with his heart, but it's not a problem right now. So I just went, okay, cool. It's a future Julie problem. That's fine. It's not a current problem. So I don't need to worry about something I can't control at the moment. And I'm a big believer in that. Don't worry about things you can't control. So at that point, it was very much just embracing that little boy. And just looking at him every day, and probably my biggest stress at that moment was the C-section and going,
yeah,
geez, what have they done? I can't
done to me.
Felt like my guts had been pulled out, basically. Sorry, folks, but I really did. I recovered much easier on the second one. But yeah, I wasn't too stressed about things with Woody because I just kind of let things just progress. And we just, as Woody grew with us, we just learned. And he became our new normal.
Thank you for saying that. That's so beautiful. As you know, disability is close to my heart. And I almost regret asking you that question in that way now because you just put that so beautifully. And I think that's going to be such a comfort for anyone in the early stages of that journey. Interestingly, you don't do things by halves. I'm learning that very quickly. You're an adapter. You move quick. You're in Japan or India or Brizzy, or you're giving birth earlier than you thought. There's a lot going on. You're also returning to work 4 hours after giving birth. Your son is in special care at this time too. Tell us about that.
Oh, man. Yeah, so when Woody was born, because I didn't have any time to prepare for it, really, and work doesn't stop. And at that point, we just moved into a new warehouse and Flora and Fauna was like going woof. So, and we didn't necessarily, and we're completely bootstrapped. So it's not like we have investors to pile money into this thing. We're doing everything out of cash flow. So if we bring anyone on in a role, it's a really considered thing to do. So I was still doing heaps of everything, which is a problem, but it was a problem. And so, yeah, so I was back and we actually had, I don't want to go on about it too much, but we actually had a bit of an issue when Woody was born with one of our competitors trolling our social media, which was quite vile actually. And they did it in a fairly horrific way. And it was just as Woody was born. So now I always remember Woody's birth with this incident. Yeah, which I think is probably one of the most horrific things you can do as a business to another business.
And especially someone, I mean, not that it matters anyway, but it's someone going through the early days of the hormone drops and everything that happens after you give birth.
100%. It's like, what are you doing? So I just think firmly with businesses, run your own race, just run your own race. Like, stop trying to trip other people up on their races. Anyway, so we had that. So I had to jump back in because the team were like, oh God, we don't want to tell you this, but we know you're going to want to know this. And we actually need your help. So yeah, so I had to kind of jump on board. And then when I was back in, I was just like, oh, I'm back in working again. So here we are. And actually, once I was out of hospital, I was at home for a fair bit because the C-section and what have you. But actually, when he was asleep, I had bags of time on my hands. And he was asleep most of the time. And in some ways, I don't know whether life was a little bit easier for me or not, but I couldn't breastfeed. Again, I think it's my geriatric nature that allowed me to do that. I just put in everything on my age, right? So I couldn't breastfeed. And so after 5 days of me trying and going, I got like a tiny little thing. The nurse said to me, she goes, it may be time to call it. And so we formula fed. And we have this amazing machine, which is like a blooming coffee machine for formula. It is the best thing we bought for our children ever.
My friend uses that and it looks incredible and it does everything, right? It gives you the formula, warms the bottle, puts the water in. Is that right?
100%. It does it all. At the right temperature that you need, blah, blah, blah. It's amazing. And so we use that. But what that did mean is that Tom could feed as well as me. So he got the nights. Yeah. So it sort of made, I think, probably my life a little bit easier in that respect. So yeah, so I could do quite a bit of work quite quickly. So yeah.
And then I think the turnaround to pregnancy is not huge for you by the looks of your sons now. Did we get HG again? How did we feel? Oh, tell us all about it.
Yeah, so Alfie, I mean, Woody was a surprise and so was Alfie. Let's put it like that. I suddenly felt a bit sick. And then I was in the office and I was joking. I said, God, I feel just drained. And then one of the team joked with me and she went, oh, maybe you're pregnant again. I went, no, no, no. And then I sort of thought, God, I hope not. And then I was at home, working at home one day, and I suddenly had, and it's very specific, for me at least, it's a very specific taste and feeling on being sick. And nothing like anything I'd done before, so nothing like the 10 tequilas I'd had. It's very specific. And I suddenly went and threw up, and I went, oh, hello, old friend.
I don't need a pregnancy test.
No, I know
what's going on here.
I know. So, and I had a pregnancy test in the drawer left over from Woody. So I just did it and I went, those bloody two lines. So I texted to Tom and I'm like, round two, mate.
And how old is Woody at this stage?
6 months.
Oh my, wow.
No. 6 months.
What did Tom say?
Yeah, it was very, very quick. But in some ways, pretty good. And it was really weird. So I had HG the whole way through again with Alfie, same thing. But it was so weird because we went for the harmony test and stuff. And I kind of just, again, gut instinct, whatever it was, I just went, no, I don't think he's going to have Down syndrome. And he didn't. And so his was a relatively straightforward pregnancy. They got him out a couple of weeks earlier, again, old. But it was pretty straightforward. And I had a C-section because I'd already had one with Woody. So they said, yes, you kind of need to have one again. And the only thing that was different, I think, with that one was I was actually, it was through COVID. It was in the middle of COVID, May 2020, in the middle of COVID when I had Alfie. So that was all a bit weird to navigate because Tom and I don't have any family here. So one of our, and we couldn't take Woody into the hospital. So actually one of our team at Flora and Fauna looked after Woody for 3 days, which is...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is how close we were as a team, actually. We had a beautifully close team. And the fact that someone stepped in to do that, knowing the pickle we were in, was quite special. Because at the point I was going, well, I could just go and have Alfie on my own and we just figure it out. And Tom's like, oh, I really want to be there. I'm like, well, we might not have any choice. So
yeah, we can't leave Woody in the house on his own, unfortunately.
Exactly. Can't leave him. So, you know, kind of got to do that. But yeah, so that was really lucky because I ended up having super high blood pressure. So I was in recovery for about 8 hours whilst they tried to bring my blood pressure down. And by the time I got to the room, Tom was like, I don't even know what was, he didn't even know what was happening. And Alfie's had 3 feeds by that point.
Wow.
Yeah. So, that was a bit different. That was the only very complicated thing other than the HG. But for me, that was then normal at that point. And then, yeah, and we now have 2 beautiful boys who is double trouble. And being so close in age, I think, has been magical for both of them because it is kind of like having twins. And it is, in fact, happened this morning. I was lying in bed and I was saying to Tom, I was like, oh, can you hear them? And I could hear them. They're out of their room and they were just chit-chatting amongst themselves, talking about, like, Woody has very basic speech. So he's learning to put 2 words together, but he certainly can't do sentences. And he's got low muscle tone. So people with Down syndrome have low muscle tone. So he can't pronounce words clearly. So he goes to speech and physio and occupational therapy every week. But his speech has come on so much in the last few months. And I think that having Alfie around him as well is massively helpful for that.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. You've just actually brought me to something I did want to ask you.
Yeah.
Someone that has a disability often has quite a few appointments in their week, which might seem overwhelming for a mum that really does want to return to paid work, a dad too, whatever the family dynamic is. How did you actually navigate that, particularly in the early days?
Yeah. So, well, for the first year, we weren't really sure what we would do. Still not sure what we'd do. And we didn't understand how the NDIS all fitted in or anything like that. And I think this is where I think there's just a real lack of guidance.
Yeah.
We kind of had our babies and it was like, see ya. And the GPs don't, to be fair to them, you know, they're general practitioners. They don't know the details on this. Our pediatrician didn't really help that much. And so we were a bit in the dark. And it was only after the first year when I kind of went, what's all this NDIS about? And I spoke to them and I went, oh, we can have this help. Oh, this is really amazing. And it wasn't even so much financial help. It was actually just help and advice, knowing what we need to do because we didn't know what he needed. And Tom and I firmly believe that, well, maybe he just needs to develop a bit before we know what he needs. So that's, I mean, what I think what's amazing for us is that Tom and I are a team. So we both very much look after the boys equally. And what tends to happen is he does the appointments. So we have our appointments early in the morning, starting at 8. We go to Napa at Lane Cove and we actually, it's a nightmare of time in the morning to go there. But anyway, and Tom tends to do those. So I tend to do the admin and he does the physical appointments. So he tends to do those and then we go into work afterwards. So we kind of just make it all work. But it has been a bit of a journey of us trying to figure our way through the NDIS and understand what it's all about. And I do feel that there is a missing link in that somewhere. With just, I think they're almost so fixated on here's a budget, here's what you can spend, that they're missing a piece around people just need advice.
Yes, like just because you have a child with Down syndrome, how are you meant to know on day one what on earth the journey is going to look like? There's no way to know.
Yeah, exactly. And every child is so different.
Yeah. And so on that, what would be your number one piece of advice for the early days of navigating NDIS?
Oh my gosh. I think talk to them. I think if you can get on the phone to someone to have a conversation, I found that quite helpful. There's a lot of groups that talk about it and all that kind of stuff, but I just found that I found it a lot of white noise because everyone just gives their opinion, which, and then you just have a whole bunch of blooming emotional opinions, really. I think if you can get on the phone to them and explain your child, it was actually probably easier for us because we have, Woody has a very clear genetic difference. I remember speaking to a cab driver once and he was telling me that his child has autism, and they couldn't get stuff for speech therapy because it's not clear. It's just harder.
It's not classified. So then it makes the process hard. Oh, I've never even thought of that. It's like bureaucracy getting in the way of the help you need.
100%. I think they're so focused on the small minority abusing the system that they're failing to see the majority actually genuinely needing this help.
Yeah, that's so hard.
It's really hard, right? And they are 100%, there are people abusing that system, 100%. But you've got to focus on the majority here and put whatever is in place to sort that. So, but I think if you can just get, that's the first thing I did. I just got on the phone to them and just had a conversation and just went, how do I navigate this? Yeah.
And so I've jumped you around a bit, but was the return to work similar the second time around in that you just had to find a way to navigate it all with your kids, with your baby at home? Were both of them at home full time at that stage?
Yes.
I mean, obviously the newborn was, but was Woody cared for within the home at all at that stage?
Yeah, he was. We've been quite maybe protective, I don't know. But at that point it was COVID anyway, so couldn't go anywhere. But for that first year, we very much kept Woody at home. So we didn't, and we don't have family here, right? So we didn't take him to childcare. We just went, and I think it was probably a little bit easier with us because we had our own business, we can be flexible. So we just went, we just made the call to be flexible and work it out ourselves. And then COVID hit. So both boys were at home anyway for quite a while. So yeah, so we just made that work. But yes, I returned to work basically straight away, second time around. And we were very much, and in fact, I kind of had to, because he was born May 2020 and March 2020 was when COVID hit, but also when basically your business either dropped like a stone or soared like a bird, pretty much. And ours soared like a bird because we sold essential stuff. So we sold food and hand sanitizer and skincare and all that kind of stuff and all those stuff where people went, I'm at home with nothing to do. I need 50,000 face masks.
And my mortgage has been paused, so let's spend.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is not the right way to go about it, by the way.
It's not the right. I know. If only we knew then what we know now. But anyway,
it was fun. We needed to get our thrills from somewhere.
I know, we did. We're like, what else can I buy? Yeah. So they were both at home and the business was just in huge growth mode again. And so I was back at work really quickly. I remember being on the phone to suppliers going, how much hand sanitizer can you make for me? And this is where we would sell like maybe six units of hand sanitizer a week. And suddenly we were selling like 6,000 a day.
Oh my word.
Yeah, it was bonkers. And then we had to recruit people quickly. So we had, and it was quite lovely because we had people who had, I remember there's one lady and she ran a yoga studio and she didn't have any work. So she came to work with us. So we suddenly had a whole bunch of people working with us who didn't have jobs because of COVID. And then now we gave them jobs because of COVID. So it's a shuffle of chess.
Speaking of a shuffle, I'm now standing because Posey has cracked it. Thank you so much for cooperating with me doing this. So you've been navigating this huge time at home, at work, through COVID. Eventually you sell the business. Your babies are young.
Yes.
You make an incredible profit. Tell us about all of that.
Yeah. So when we won the Telstra Award in 2018, that's when folks started going, hang on, who's Flora and Fauna? And from that point, we started having sort of investors approach us about investing in the business. And I really didn't want them to because I was just like, meh. And then we were talking, and then we were in the Deloitte Tech Fast 50 as well, which we were in, and we did really well in actually. And Deloitte, I mean, it's a great marketing stream or business development stream for Deloitte because they just find lots of businesses sell coming from this Tech Fast 50. But we were talking to Kat at Deloitte, who's one of the M&A partners there. And she said, now might be a really good time to think about selling. So we've been having these conversations for a while. And I was always like, oh, it's not the right time. It's not the right time. It's not the right time. And then when Alfie was born and we suddenly had our hands pretty full and Flora and Fauna was doing pretty well, I'm a big believer of sell at the high, don't wait down. And yeah, sure, there could be more gas in the tank that you could get and you could get a bit more and this, that, and the other, but there's all ifs, whats, maybes, right? So you've got to leave gas in the tank for someone else. You have to when you're selling a business. So Deloitte, Kat from Deloitte was talking to us and I just went, okay, let's start the process. And in fact, at that time, and I always keep forgetting this, we actually didn't want to sell the business. We were actually looking for investment. So
yeah,
because I just said, to do what we need to do next, we knew we need to do a huge amount of work in terms of our own brand and overseas expansion and stuff like that. We needed capital. We needed capital. So we couldn't do it on our own. We couldn't do it out of cash flow. So I said to Kat, I said, okay, let's try and get some capital in the business, but also so at that point we can take a little bit off the table so that we can be comfortable and hopefully pay our mortgage off. And so at least we feel de-risked now we have two young humans. And so that's what we initially went out with. So we went to private equity players and we were looking to sell like half the business, but stay in the business and keep running it. And we had, I think, three offers. And then at the 11th, and we were about to go into a, so often what happens with this is you go out, you have a lot of people looking at your stuff and a few tire kickers and stuff, and then you may or may not get some offers in. And this process can be quick or it can take flipping forever. And then normally you go into a sort of an exclusive due diligence with one of the parties. Anyway, the 11th, we were just about to go into that exclusive due diligence with one of them when the 11th hour, one of our competitors, the parent company of our competitor approached us and said, can we have a look? And my initial gut reaction was, no way, Jose. No chance. And then Kat said to me, she goes, he's super keen. He goes, could you at least just meet up with him? And I went, okay, I'll meet up with him, the CEO. So I met up with Dave, CEO, and then I really liked him. And I got on really, really well with him. And for me, I like working with people who I like. And I just thought, he's a really nice fella, very normal, very down to earth, an amazing salesman, obviously. And that process just moved forward from there. And to be frank, they offered us a number that was quite silly. So they wanted us to, they wanted to buy the whole business, which was a different, which was then a different thing for us to consider because we weren't prepared for that. But then I looked at it and went, okay, well, if we sell the whole thing, the conversation I had with him was, if we sell the whole thing, can we still do what we wanted to do? And the answer was, yes, you can. I'm like, okay, well, we can still do it because we've still got gas in our tank that we want to do this. So that seemed to make sense. So that's the path we went down. It took us 6 months to get to that final sale. And it was really, really, really tricky the whole way along and quite exhausting and emotionally exhausting. And in the week before, I nearly pulled the plug on it, but we ended up getting there. But it's not without, yeah, not without a bit of drama along the way.
And so then you sell. Do you exit or are you now working for this business?
So I was now, so the idea was that Tom and I were going to stay working for the business and still run Forum Fauna, but also we'd run Nourish Life, which was the competitor as well. So we'd, as a pair, we'd run the two. And for me, I went, well, this is kind of exciting. Like, this is interesting. So that was the idea. But then once we'd sold the business, what had actually happened is that actually only been an employment contract that had come through for me. So we kind of assumed that Tom's was on its way. And then once we sold the business, they actually said, well, we don't really want Tom. And that was the start of things falling apart a little bit. And because with us, it's a bit of a buy one, get one free. Well, you don't get one free, but buy one, you get two.
Otherwise, he would have kept working.
Exactly. It's like we come as a pair.
Yeah.
So that was the first bit where, and I'm very authentic and very, oh, no, I'm just very transparent. I'm just like, just tell me as it is. I don't care either which way. Yeah. I just...
Don't feed me a lie.
Don't feed me a lie. Don't bloody lie. So that's when it all just went, whoa. So I had to fight to get him to stay. But by that point, and I think what they described, they just thought we were a risk. We were a risk as because we were married. I'm like, we've run a business together for bloody 10 years.
Oh, and you just paid a bit of money for it. Like, have you seen how profitable it is?
Exactly. And they're going, it's more of a risk if we go. But they didn't seem to see. I think this is the thing with a lot of corporates. They're very, very arrogant and they're quite dismissive of founders. And that was our experience, basically.
Wow. So then you exit? Do you take some time off? What happens?
Yeah. So we stuck it out for a bit because I didn't really want to leave because I really love working with our team and I didn't want to let the team down. And I stuck it out for as long as I could. And then basically in the October, I had a bit of a breakdown actually. I think what's interesting here, I was on a call with the CEO, the CFO and the chief of people, whatever, and had a proper breakdown. Not one called me and checked if I was okay. And HR were on there, right? I'm like, come on. And at that point, and I was not okay. I was most definitely not. And at that point, I said to Tom, I can remember sitting on the steps outside our house and I said, I got to go. I can't do this.
I can't work for them anymore.
Can't do this. So then I phoned up Dave and I said, I'm quitting. And he went, right. He goes, I assume Tom's going as well. Yes, we do come as a pair.
As previously stated.
As previously stated. So, yeah, so that was how that all transpired. So I ended up, because I was only on a 3 months notice period, which was dumb. But anyway, and I didn't have any tie-in or anything like that. So I could have walked day one. And so in February, the end of February, I left. But at the same time, I knew the founders of Snuggle Honey and knew Snuggle Honey was up for sale because I'd been talking to Tom, different Tom, founder of Snuggle Honey, about him selling the business because he was asking me my advice and stuff on it from basically a year prior. And then in the, I think the October, November, when I knew I was going from Flora and Fauna, I knew it was six, they'd been trying to sell the business for 6 months and hadn't. And I knew it was still up for sale. And then I went, this is a cool business that I think has a bit long, it has gas in the tank and it has a runway and it's fun. And I think there's a lot we can do with it. And so that's when I had a chat with him. And then one of the investors who put an offer in on Flora and Fauna, but we didn't go with, I really liked them. So I contacted him and I said, do you want to team up and do this together? And so that's how that happened. So I left Flora and Fauna on the 28th of Feb and basically started the first, the next day with Snuggle Honey. So,
you know, which, you like resting?
Now, you know what? It's interesting because in hindsight, what I actually did need was a break. I really, really needed a break.
We learn a lot in hindsight, unfortunately, don't we?
I know. It's because right now I need a break. Like now I'm there going, oh, I need a break now because I've been going at this solidly for 10 years without, pretty much without a day off. And so, but it's all good in hindsight, right?
And what was, you had two little people, sold a business, went through the motions of that. You enter a business basically the next day. What were the early days of that like as a mother engaging in paid work and then the work of having small people?
Oh, gosh. It's probably, oh, God, just made it work. Like we just made it work somehow. So, and we're still in a similar boat now, really, in the fact that the kids are at home and we're at home and we're working at home. And it was easier when they were little. Now they're 4 and 5. And so they're very, they demand attention. And as they should. And so, yeah, it's more tricky to kind of work and do that at the same time now, really. But we just make it work. So like, I'll be at home one day, Tom goes into the office. And then at the moment, they're in sort of preschool 2 days a week. And next year, they're going to be both in there 5 days. So because Woody actually has to go to proper school. So it's just terrifying in itself. But so we've really just kind of stumbled our way through.
Yeah.
I made it work. But also, you know what? We've made rules to suit us. So we don't do 9 to 5, as it were, because that just, because I think it's completely outdated and does not work for parents. And also the world of, the modern world doesn't do 9 to 5. Like
whoever, that man that made that 5 day work week, I have a lot to say to him and it's a shame that he's no longer here for me to have a conversation.
Right.
Those hours and those days. I would like it to be 9 to 3, Monday to Thursday. That'd be nice.
Well, and a lot of our team, in fact, most of our team are part-time. And they might do, because most of our team are mums with kids, or we've got a couple of dads with kids. And they need part-time hours because they've either got to pick their kids up or, you know, drop them off, or they want to have a day at home with them, or whatever it is. And so we've also kind of morphed this business to work to kind of suit everyone.
Yeah.
And I think flexibility has been really key.
Yeah.
For us.
I have 3 more questions. I said to you before we even started that I could talk to you for hours. I could tell that straight away. But I am conscious of your time because it is finite as we're learning.
Yeah.
My first of the final 3 is, what does Woody starting school entail from a logistical, emotional potentially point of view too? Is it any different to Alfie starting school the year after? Are there things that you'd pass on to another parent navigating a kid with Down syndrome starting school?
Yeah, it's actually been such a big thing for us because you have options. You can go to mainstream or a special school, basically. And we've noticed with Woody, he's developing at such a rate that in 6 months, he can be in a different spot to where he is now. So we're exploring both avenues. So he goes to a preschool currently, and they've already said to us, so it's a private preschool, but they've already said to us that they would happily take him next year, which is amazing. And they have been phenomenal with him in preschool. Like we were a different daycare before, which was a very different boat, and he got super sick, and we've actually nearly lost him once. So we've had some real tricky times with Woody.
Oh God, that just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah. He was in hospital with pneumonia and RSV and various other things. And his oxygen levels, for anyone who knows about this stuff, went to low 60s, which Tom and I were in the UK. And luckily Tom's dad's here, who was a doctor. And even he was, I think he's emotionally scarred Tom's dad for quite some time. And so he has a very special bond with Woody on the back of some of this. So we're very conscious about Woody's health. And yeah, there's so many factors to bring into it. But basically we've been looking at two schools, or we've been looking at a few schools. The mainstream one, they've gone, yeah, we'll take him. And I know they'd be amazing with him. The challenge is that suddenly he goes to a much higher ratio. You know, you're suddenly 20 to 1 or whatever the number is. And he's a bit of a runner. So he's not also not someone who takes direction easily. So whereas you say to Alfie, come with me, Alfie comes with you. Woody just does what he wants. So my concern is he's safe. So, and at break time or whatever, and suddenly he goes out onto the main road. Those are my concerns.
Yeah.
So we've looked at three special schools. Two of them have actually said he's too severe, so they don't want him, which is a bit, and they're going, okay, so if you don't want him, where does he go? So I was a little bit offended by that. Yeah.
He's too good for you anyway.
He's too good for you. Sod off. So, yeah. And so we're looking at another special school at the moment, which is beautiful, and I love it. And anyway, we're just going through the interview process. So we had an interview last week, and we're just waiting to find out. So if he doesn't get into there, we actually don't know what we'll do. Because, and I think for me, this is where it, because if special schools won't take him, what do you do? Like,
and why is that? If the mainstream school would, why won't they? I'm perplexed by that.
I know. I think the mainstream one will, because legally they can't, because he's already there, legally they can't say no. So, and I've tried to have a really honest conversation with them. Yes, but is it right? Like, yeah, regardless of the legalities.
Yes, like, would you recommend this?
Yeah. And I think because he's not at the special schools and they have so many people applying, they have to say no to a bunch. And so they literally do it. So you have to have assessments. So we've had assessments for Woody, and he's come out on a severe moderate scale in terms of intellectual delay, just development delay. But that was done 6-8 months ago. And he's a different boy now. But all they look at is a piece of paper. So all they care about is, no, we're a school that looks at, we need moderate. So
it's like that taxi conversation. That person didn't quite fall into the bucket.
Yeah. So if they won't take him, our only choice is mainstream, which seems nuts, given that that's clearly not, if the special schools won't take him, then mainstream's clearly not the right solution. So, yeah, so it's really, really, really challenging. And I would just say, go and if you're someone dealing with this, go and look at your local schools, talk to your local schools, and definitely look at special schools as well. And I don't think you can go too early in terms of having a look at this process, because it's such a different process with Alfie. Alfie, it's, you're in, great, lovely, like easy peasy. It's far more complex.
And I know that I've listened to a podcast where you talk about the customer, and you seem to be very country. Wow, I just accidentally said, did you hear what I just said?
I said,
see you next Tuesday by accident.
See you next Tuesday.
I'm actually going to keep this in, because that's a good laugh for anyone listening. What I meant to say was that you're very customer centric. As someone that's trying to build my business, what's your number one tip of how we look at and deal with the customer? Because I know there's a lot of mums out there that start new businesses after motherhood to suit their lives better.
Yes, 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 yes. I think get as close to your customer as you can. So, and I think this should be applicable for any size business, right? If you were the CEO of Blowing Woolies, you should be on your social finding out what customers actually say about you. And the problem is most of them aren't, right? But I think ask your customer questions. Like, don't be afraid to ask them for their opinion or their questions, because sometimes we can be a bit afraid of what they're going to say. And try to, often when you start a business as well, you can be a bit defensive about it because it's your baby.
Yeah. So it's an extension of you almost, especially in the early days.
Absolutely. So remove those defenses, be like an open book and take feedback, take every bit of feedback and look at it and absorb it and help and use it as fuel to grow your business. Take every bit of customer feedback and treat that as water growing that acorn into an oak tree.
That's brilliant business advice. And I am jumping, I've just realized again, because now I want to go back to Woody and his dynamic with Alfie in particular. For anyone that is in the early days of navigating, maybe one child having a disability and the other not, tell us a little bit about the day-to-day and the joys. And I know that there must be challenges such as the starting school thing, but from what I can see from you, you're more focused on the good bits and that there are plenty of good bits. So I'd love to hear about that in closing.
Yes, so many good bits. So many, and this is where you do, it's so different for each child. Like Alfie will suddenly come out with an enormous sentence about something and you're like, where did you even learn that? What? And you're almost like, with Alfie, I'm almost bewildered by what he does come out with. And it's cool and I love it. And I'm just high-fiving him constantly because I just see him growing quite quickly into this amazing human. And then with Woody, it's so different because suddenly, like Woody this morning said, yes, like really quick, like really clearly, because normally he'll just go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes, yes. And we just are going, yeah. And like super high-fiving those things. So I suppose you just expectations, that not even expectations, because that's wrong, because I don't actually have zero expectations of any of my children. But you high-five the different milestones. And we just ignore the milestones when everyone goes, your child must do this at this point. I'm like, no. I am not putting any for either of them. I'm not putting any pressure or stress on us or them. They will develop. We will support them as much as we can, and they will develop as they develop. So Woody, because I think this is where you can stress yourself out a lot by comparing. And don't. Woody didn't start walking until he was, well, until last October, so nearly five. And prior to that point, he was crawling everywhere and we were there going, oh, is he ever going to walk? Is he ever going to walk? And now he runs everywhere. It's hilarious. He's got like a Superman run. It's brilliant. I love it. He looks thoroughly unstable when he walks and runs. And somehow managed to stay upright. But that was such a momentous occasion for us. Whereas at 13 months, Alfie suddenly just pops up and starts walking and there we go. So absolutely, we don't stress ourselves too much with all of the stuff that he's not doing, because we just celebrate all the stuff he is. And that's the case with both of them.
That is such a beautiful way to end this. You're nearly bringing me to tears. I don't think anyone that listens to this podcast wouldn't know about Snuggle Honey. And by the way, I sent Ray off in Snuggle Honey to daycare today.
Thank
you. Before we wrap up, just in case they don't know the business or where to find you, let us know where they can find you online.
Okay, amazing. So if you haven't heard of Snuggle, where have you been? So we're the go-to for birth announcements and beautiful, beautiful baby clothes, everything organic. And you can find us online, snugglehoneykids.com.au. We're also on Insta and Facebook and TikTok, although I'm doing that and I'm not very good at it. So don't judge. And we're also in heaps of stockists as well. And I think one of the best things for us is when you feel our product, you go, God, it's lovely.
Your long sleeve tops with the button, three buttons here, and they're ribbed. They're beautiful.
Oh,
they feel good.
They feel good. And yeah, so also visit our lovely, lovely stockists, because lots of physical retailers have been doing it so tough out there and our stockists are no different. And so the more we can support them and send people their way, the better. And we've got a stockist list on our website.
Thank you so much for your time and sharing your incredible story.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.